Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And as we go worldwide to our worldwide audience today, we have another dead cop. Another dead cop. It seems like once a week now. Has it always been like this? It doesn't seem like it's always been like this, as far as I can recall. Now, this one probably won't get the attention that some of the others might get. This was a black on black affair. Cop killed by a 18-year-old kid. Might have been smoking pot in his car. The cop comes up on him. What does the kid decide to do? For whatever reason, he decides to shoot the cop. I don't understand, but there we have it. Snellville, Georgia. Just shocking, isn't it? Is anybody shocked anymore? Is it possible to even shock anyone anymore? Maybe it's not possible. All right, well, we could talk about the caravan. The caravan is on the way, whatever. All right. I don't really want to talk about the caravan. I'm not that impressed. And I don't have anything against the people trying to come here, except for the fact, I don't know if you people have noticed, but I've noticed that they're almost all men between the ages of, I don't know, 15 and 35. Doesn't that strike anyone as odd? I mean, obviously we know that the CNN types and the communists and the hippies and the queers and the feminists, they're all going to slobber all over anyone trying to cross the border and claim that they're all women and children dressed in rags fleeing from persecution. We know that. But has anyone stopped to just look at the pictures, truckload after truckload, of all the young men who should be building or rebuilding Honduras and Guatemala and all those far-flung places? Why are they all getting on trucks and coming here? And I don't understand. Am I supposed to weep for a 20-year-old guy who should be rebuilding his country? I don't weep for them. You know who I do weep for? The women and the little kids who these men have put at the forefront of their caravan for the cameras. That's who I weep for. Those poor kids and those poor women, they're not in control of that whole situation. It's the young men who are in control. And one old man, one really, really old man with a history going back to Nazi occupation in Hungary. Yeah, that one old man. All right, but let's get to, we do have some interesting news on the personhood front. If you've listened to the show for any period of time, you know that I have been involved in the effort to recodify or reestablish the legal personhood of the unborn child in order to prevent the murder of innocent people in our midst. That movement came and went, the personhood movement that came. We had a few elections, we lost. People who worship democracy lost interest in us. And so anyway, but the Supreme Court down in Alabama has issued a ruling that states unequivocally that an unborn baby is a person, and the death of that person can be punished by execution. Now, how did they do that? Well, there was a case. There was a case of Jesse Phillips. He was charged with the murder of his wife and their unborn child, and he was sentenced to be executed. And the state Supreme Court just reaffirmed his sentence, rejecting his lawyer's claims. The Alabama Supreme Court rejected the claim that Mr. Phillips could not be sentenced for the unborn child's death because the child was not a person. So the Alabama Supreme Court has rejected that. And now, in a special concurrence, Justice Tom Parker called on the U.S. Supreme Court to revisit Roe versus Wade. He says, I write, here's what Judge Tom Parker says. I write specially to expound upon the principles presented in the main opinion, writing of Roe v. Wade, and note the continued legal anomaly and logical fallacy that is Roe versus Wade. I urge the United States Supreme Court to overrule this increasingly isolated exception to the rights of the unborn, to the rights of unborn children. He goes on to cite laws all across the country that acknowledge the humanity and the personhood of the unborn child that the United States Supreme Court decided to ignore with Roe v. Wade, and which all other politicians and most of the other people in the country have simply chosen to ignore. Because Roe versus Wade isn't a law at all. It's just an opinion that everyone decided to go by. Everyone. Well, not everyone. That's a figure of speech. Almost everyone. Not me, personally. Judge Parker goes on. He says, this judicially created exception from recognizing an unborn child's inalienable right to life is an aberration to natural law and to the common law. You see, what happened here was that Jesse Phillips was sentenced to death for the murder of two persons. In Alabama, you have to kill more than one person, for them to even consider sentencing you to death. So the only way they could get the death penalty was if during the sentencing, the point was made that he had murdered two persons. And so that's what's happened. And the judge in his concurrence, his special concurrence with Roe, said, in spite of voluminous state laws, the isolated Roe exception stubbornly endures. The Roe exception, he calls it. I like that. The Roe exception. Is that how maybe history will view it someday? There was a period of time, a shameful, dark period in our nation's history when we observed the Roe exception. Maybe. He says the Roe exception lacks legal foundation and is patently illogical. And he says Roe versus Wade stands as an indictment against the United States Supreme Court. Pretty powerful language. He concludes by saying the only way Roe can continue is if the U.S. Supreme Court insists against all scientific evidence and reason that that unborn children are not human. Which they've never said that. And then, no. See, the thing is, the only way Roe can continue is if we all agree to abide by it. I mean, not us, I suppose. Us here on the ground, us civilians, we don't have that much to say. But if all the other governing officials decide. See, a governor could stand up right now. I don't know why the governor. Where is the governor of Alabama now that his state Supreme Court has made this ruling? You would think he would stand up and say, hey, the court has spoken. But for whatever reason, you can't find the Alabama governor with a GPS after this. I have long been very pessimistic about ending the murder of unborn children, and that I have been convinced for some time that it would only end after some sort of violence and bloodshed. But maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. This is an obvious attempt by the Alabama Supreme Court to set up a case for the U.S. Supreme Court. Now that Donald Trump has given us, what I've been told is a conservative majority. And so I hope I'm wrong. I hope that the United States Supreme Court rules to end the Roe exception. I hope so. I hope so, because I'm not a fan of bloodshed and violence. Are you guys familiar with citations in the Supreme Court? This is a bit off the subject. Whenever Roe is cited, it's cited as 410 U.S. 113. 410 U.S. 113 is the case citation. I always found it odd that, I shouldn't say always. I just discovered this because I'm not a lawyer. The Citation is 410, which is the same gauge as a shotgun, which if the United States Supreme Court had ruled that women had a right to shoot their babies with a shotgun, people wouldn't have gone along with that exception. If they would have said there's an exception if you use a 410 shotgun, that wouldn't have flown. The citation is 410.113. 113 being 100 times rebellion. Anyway, that's my numerological contribution for the week. This article from WorldNet Daily ends with a notification that in August, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals that issues opinions in Alabama struck down a law in Alabama that banned second trimester abortions, in which limbs are removed from the baby's body in the womb. So Alabama passed a law saying, we're not going to have you dismembering people. We're not going to have that. And the 11th Circuit Court struck it down. And now the Supreme Court there says that an unborn child is a person. So hopefully I'm wrong and there is a civil and nonviolent showdown coming via the United States Supreme Court. And if Donald Trump's Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade, I'll dance in the streets and admit that I was wrong. Just so all you people know out there. All right. Now, so let's pray that the Supreme Court sees the light and all of that. So let's go on. Should we go from there? Well, since we're talking about dismembering, let's go to Jamal Khashoggi. Jamal Khashoggi, where should I start? Well, let's start with just a little bit of some of who is Jamal Khashoggi. I got into a little last week, but I wanted to wait. I wanted to wait because, well, I was waiting to see all the facts. I didn't even know if the guy was dead last week. Although I was pretty sure. Now I'm sure. Because the people who killed him have admitted that he's dead. Although they don't necessarily know where his body is. So Khashoggi, as I thought, was the nephew of arms dealer Adnan Khashoggi. He was also the cousin of Dodi Al-Fayed. Do you remember that one? It was a blast from the past, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer as she sat looking delightful. Do you remember Dodi Al-Fayed? That was Princess Diana's boyfriend who died with him in the car there. Yeah, this was his, Jamal Khashoggi was his cousin. Khashoggi was a friend of Prince Alawid bin Talal. He was one of the guys that the Saudi royal family detained. Remember when they arrested all the Saudi, the Saudi elites were all arrested and held in the Four Seasons Hotel or whatever it was there? Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman cracked down on what some called corruption and others said, no, that was just Mohammed's consolidation power. Earlier this year, you remember? He had all the elites locked up in a hotel at gunpoint. I knew it was weird. There was something really weird going on. So anyway, Prince Al-Walid, who's Khashoggi's buddy, turns out he turned into a big-time enemy of the guy who became the crown prince. Khashoggi's made his bones as a reporter by interviewing Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. He was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood and a supporter of Hamas, was Jamal Khashoggi. In addition to being a once-in-a-while, sometimes contributing columnist to the Washington Post. More than that, he was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, okay? Here's a quote from Jamal Khashoggi, who the United States media, Republicans and Democrats in Congress are falling all over each other to give this guy a medal, Jamal Khashoggi. Khashoggi is quoted as saying there can be no political reform and democracy in any Arab country without accepting political Islam as part of it. So he's an Islamist. He says Arabs will always give their vote to Islamic parties, or I should say, he said a significant number of Arabs will always give their vote to Islamic political parties if democracy is allowed. And then he went on as if he was some worshiper and promoter of democracy, when really what he was all about was the worship and promotion of Islamism. So Khashoggi ends up buddying up with the wrong side. He's friends of Al-Walid. He was aligned with Al-Walid's faction. Al-Walid's faction lost power and influence, and Crown Prince Mohammed was crowned. And the crown there in Saudi Arabia, it appears to me the crown assassinated a rival Islamist Muslim Brotherhood member. And here's what I have to say about the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, as I understand it. The crown exercising its just authority as judge and executioner may have exercised that power inappropriately. They may or may not. I don't know all the facts. But the crown is endowed with the just authority of judge and executioner. So to automatically say that Jamal was the good guy and Mohammed was the bad guy, well, I don't think we know all the facts. Although, one's named Jamal and one's named Mohammed, so it sounds pretty ugly no matter which way you go. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to everyone in the audience except Jamal Khashoggi, who's not joining us this week. Jamal having been dispatched to Allah, only to discover that Allah did not exist. Oh, what do I have here now? NBC News is reporting regarding Mr. Khashoggi that, the Saudis are admitting that that Khashoggi died. The Ministry of whatever there, the Ministry of Hate over in the Saudi Arabia, says there was a discussion that escalated into a fight that ended in Mr. Khashoggi's death. Interesting. Sounds like the Ministry of Hate over there in Saudi Arabia has hired a recent graduate of the Columbia School of Journalism to write their statement. You see, there was an argument that escalated to a fight that ended in the death of, let's see. Now, Senator Lindsey Graham is outraged. He is outraged. Now, Lindsey Graham, having secured his bona fides with the gullible evangelicals and moronic Republicans all across the country, because he actually showed some spine during the Kavanaugh affair. Everyone loves Lindsey Graham now. Everyone's here. But wait, before we get to Lindsey Graham, no, let's do Lindsey Graham first. Since you people probably think he's your friend, I should clue you in on Mr. Lindsey Graham. Never married, no kids. If you have no children, you should not be allowed to hold public office. I'm sorry. All right, but I'll leave that aside because I don't want to insult all you people who don't have kids out there. You're fine people. Lindsey Graham, on the other hand. Lindsey Graham says he's going to sanction Saudi Arabia. He's outraged, and he finds this latest explanation less than credible, says Lindsey Graham. He does not find this allegation that there was a discussion that escalated to a fight that ended in the death of Mr. Khashoggi. Lindsey Graham finds that not credible. Lindsey, let me tell you what I find incredible. You, Lindsey Graham, you've presided over the murder and dismemberment of 20 million, at least 20 million of your own citizens, the whole time stating how you were against it. For 25 years, you've presided over it. You've signed off on the legislation year after year that funded the dismemberment and murder of millions of your own citizens, Mr. Graham. And now you're outraged. You find the dissembling of the Saudi Arabian government not to be credible. Is that right? You know what I find? I find you not to be credible, Mr. Lindsey Graham. Get the hell out. Resign. That's what I find, mister. And now we have Adam Schiff. So not just to be bipartisan. Adam Schiff says, if Khashoggi was fighting inside the consulate, he was fighting for his life with people sent to capture or kill him, says Adam Schiff. Mr. Schiff, are you comparing the killers dispatched by the Saudi ministry to the killers that you've funded over your political career, Mr. Schiff? The killers who you've dispatched to dismember and murder American citizens, the most innocent and defenseless? None of the people you killed, Mr. Schiff, were members of the Muslim Brotherhood. None of them were advocating the overthrow of the government. They were all 100% innocent and completely defenseless, Mr. Schiff. Your outrage falls flat, Mr. Schiff. Finally, we go to the Washington Post. The Washington Post is demanding a full accounting. They're demanding a full accounting from the Washington Post, ladies and gentlemen, is the official organ of the Church of Innocent Blood. That's what they are. They lead the worship every week. The Washington Post and all their editorial writers and all their reporters and everyone in their hierarchy, from the executive office all the way down, lead the worship of child killing and have done so for three generations. They have. It's the Washington Post who has made it verboten to discuss an end to child killing. If you say you're against child killing, you're automatically a redneck hick from the sticks. You're a radical. You might be a bomber or some kind of terrorist if you're against the murder of innocent children because of the Washington Post. They have held up the standard that has caused this delusional following, this worship of what Judge Tom Parker in Atlanta appropriately has called now the Roe exception. If it weren't for the Washington Post, there could never have been a Roe versus Wade if it wasn't for the Washington Post. They've led the worship of child killing for three generations, at least those of us who have survived. And now they're demanding a full accounting. And now, oh yeah, they demand to see the body. They want to know where Khashoggi's body is. They want to see the body. Well, the bodies of the victims of the Washington Post, we could demand to see those bodies. Those bodies would fill the lobby of your prestigious building there at the Washington Post, if they could all be found, but they can't be, because so many of their parts were sold off to the modern day equivalents of Frankenstein for scientific research. We can't even find all the bodies that the Washington Post advocated being killed. All right. Have I made my point? You know, I waited all week. I heard conservative pundits and talking heads come so close to comparing the dismemberment of Khashoggi and the hypocrisy of the media and the politicians who are all freaking out and getting hysterical about it. I waited for one of them to cross the line and bring up the dismemberment and murder of 60 million American children. I waited all week and nobody brought it up. So there, I've brought it up. I've made the point. You're all a bunch of hypocrites and murderers and liars. You weep over a Muslim Brotherhood. What is he? He's an apparatchik of the Islamists is what Khashoggi is. You weep over him and then you expect us not to notice all the blood on your hands? Bunch of filthy hypocrites. All right. Meanwhile, one of the 15 Saudis who were, this is according to the New York Post, one of the 15 Saudis who arrived in Turkey the same day Khashoggi disappeared has died now in a suspicious car accident. Yeah. Mashal Saad al-Bostani is a lieutenant in the Air Force, was among the 15-member hit team. This is what the New York Post calls them, a hit team that landed in Istanbul in two private jets. So here's the thing about this. It's funny about the American reporters. If you've got a black kid sitting in his car smoking pot and he shoots a cop, everything until the day the guy's convicted is alleged that you read in the... You'll read articles on this kid for the next 5 years. Everything he did will be alleged this and alleged that. When it comes to grinding their grist for their point, Mashal Saad al-Bastoni was a member of a 15-member hit team. Not alleged. They also say that he died in a car wreck in Riyadh. Not alleged. They say he was caught on audio tape during Khashoggi's interrogations. Or they say one of the other members of the team was caught on... Here's what the Post says. He was caught on audio tape telling them to do it somewhere else outside or I will be in trouble. It doesn't say he was allegedly caught on audio tape. It says he was. And nobody's heard the audio tape. And by the way, how did the Turks get audio tape of Khashoggi being allegedly dismembered? How did they... They say it was his Apple Watch. Well, that's already been disproven. It's because the Turks are spying on the consulate there in Saudi Arabia, and they've been twisting themselves in knots for 2 weeks trying to figure out how to let out the fact that they know exactly what happened because they were watching and listening. They don't want to admit to the Turks that they've got their consulate bugged. Everybody knows everybody's consulate is bugged. All right, but everything's alleged. Everything's alleged up until the date of the execution, and unless you're trying to make the point that, I don't know, I guess the New York Post, the Washington Post, all of them, they think this might be the thing to make Trump look bad, I guess. Is that really worth it? Really, just for Trump? Is he that bad? Has he freaked you people out that bad? All right, whatever. Okay, so there, we've covered and exposed the rank hypocrisy at the highest levels of government. And so now, should we move on to the church? Now that we've exposed, let's see here. I want to go to the Catholics. I got a report from the members of our church who went to the Vatican. And the one thing that struck them was the rampant pornography everywhere. Naked statues, naked paintings of men, and just disgusting. Is it any wonder that the Pope finds himself again now in the bad religion file here at the Weekly Worldview? This time it's Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano. He's speaking out against Pope Francis again. He's now accusing he's rebuking the Pope again for covering up and rehabilitating Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. He's accusing the Pope of blasphemy. Wow, blasphemy. Why? Because the Pope has lifted restrictions against McCarrick after McCarrick, well, it became obvious that McCarrick was some kind of pervert. They say he pressured seminarians to sleep with him, but they weren't sleeping. Vigano has called for Pope Francis to resign, and ever since then, the Pope's been talking about the devil. Vigano says, I know he's talking about me. Francis has finally removed McCarrick as a cardinal, yes. He's even ordered an investigation to determine how it could have been that McCarrick rose through the ranks despite all the allegations of all that molestation for all those years. The Pope is like, Shazam! How did that happen? How did he end up being a cardinal? Well, before the Vatican's investigation even started, they released a statement that no evidence of any formal canonical sanctions had been signed by any pope in the past, and so we just didn't know. But then Vigano, this past week, he listed all the letters that were sent to the Vatican starting 18 years ago, the year 2000. That's back when a priest from New Jersey, from the seminary, first wrote to the Vatican saying that McCarrick was a pervert and a molester. And now Vigano has crossed the Rubicon, and he's just come right out and said it this past week. He says the principal cause of so many sexual abuses that are consuming the Catholic Church are based in one thing. He called it the scourge of homosexuality. That's what he said. The scourge of homosexuality is destroying the church. And, we'll just see now. He might end up like Khashoggi, by golly. He might walk into the Vatican embassy in some country and never come out. And meanwhile, the Daily Mail, from which I downloaded this story, as soon as they quote Vigano calling homosexuality a scourge, in true modern urinalism style, the reporter has to insert, "Studies have shown that homosexuals in general are no more likely to abuse than heterosexuals," unquote. Just in case you were wondering, we still advocate all forms of sodomy and sexual immorality here at the Daily Mail, despite the fact that we really hate the Catholic Church and we really like what Vigano's saying, but our loyalties are split between destroying the church and worshiping the homosexuals, and the urinalists don't know which way to go with themselves. Thank you, boys. That's right. We're coming at you the next best thing to live via the podcast worldwide. Go ahead. I can sing. All right, here we go. That is Heggie Boys, yes, Tesla, proving to be one of the most sophisticated hair metal bands of the 1980s because they could use four chords.
They didn't have hair.
They didn't really have hair, no. Four chords, too. They broke all the rules. Those boys. All right, now here's the thing about the Catholics and Khashoggi. So everything the Catholic Church has been accused of that has caused such a crisis in the church over the past, I don't know, 50 years. All the raping and the molesting, all that was done in the dark and meant to be hidden. And it's all coming out into the open. Just like the Bible warns. On the other hand, the killing of Jamal Khashoggi was not done, that was not intended to be hidden. That was, in my opinion, this was a message. There are things, machinations, that we may not be aware of, and Mohammed bin Salman and perhaps the king himself wanted it to be known where they stood in regards to the Muslim Brotherhood's hopes for toppling the House of Saud, and Khashoggi happened to be convenient. Now, he may have started a fight there in the consulate and forced them to kill him, maybe not right exactly when and how they wanted to, but believe you me, the king and the crown prince wanted it known that they killed Jamal Khashoggi. And I will reserve judgment on whether what they did was just or not. Because I don't worship democracy. And I believe that, well, I'll just leave it aside. Let's move on, for crying out loud. Let's go to Beto O'Rourke. I watched this guy. Robert Francis O'Rourke is his name. Robert Francis O'Rourke. He goes by Beto so people will think he's a Mexican because he's out of El Paso, which is 95.8% Mexican. And so he goes by Beto, which we didn't have a Beto in my high school. We had a Weto. We had a Weto, which means white boy. Beto, I guess, is short for Roberto. But Robert Francis O'Rourke is about as far from a Mexican as you can get. And he's as if Barack Obama was downloaded into a skinny Irish guy. It's the same guy. I mean, when you listen to him talk and you watch the gestures and the vacuous platitudes and the empty, hollow, meaningless speeches about nothing, the same hand gestures, the same head gesture, everything. It's a white Irish version of Barack Obama. And what's the deal with, how is it that, Beto, how is it that he can be a pro-homo, pro-abort member of the Catholic Church in good standing? How? Oh, yeah, well, I guess I can't understand that. The Catholic hierarchy, why do they let pro-aborts and pro-homosexual ministers, like Beto? He's a minister, is what he is. He speaks in public. People adore him. People follow him. That's a minister. And his ministry is pro-abortion, pro-homosexual. I guess the Catholic hierarchy lets it slide if you're also a communist, which Beto O'Rourke is a communist. And we know that the Pope is a communist, so apparently if Beto O'Rourke is a communist, and maybe... Now, Beto O'Rourke has never been accused of molesting anyone. You know, the Catholic Church appears lately to me to be the other side of the satanic coin from Islam. You got Islam, which is just blatantly satanic, evil, bloodthirsty religion, with basically the enslavement of a tyrannical religion and socialism as part of their religious political confabrication there they've got. And you got the Catholic Church on the other side. And the Islamic, they just take the name of a false god right there. They're just obvious, right? With their Allah and all that. So meanwhile, the Catholic Church is the other side of the coin, where they take the name of Jesus Christ in their mouth and they profane it with, idol worship and debauchery and sexual immorality and their own form of legalism and enslavement by a tyrannical religion. They're both two sides of the same coin. It's kind of scary that the two religions that dominate the world turn out both to be evil, but I guess it's not really shocking. Because Jesus warned us himself. He said, wide is the road. Wide is the path that leads to destruction. Narrow is the way that leads to eternal life. And I am the door, he said. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the light. That's a pretty narrow door. Goes through one guy. Narrow path. Thank you for joining us here in the Weekly Worldview as we travel along the narrow path. We're going to go to... Texas, Fort Worth, Texas, where CNN reports that Peyton Summons has passed away naturally after her heart stopped beating last Friday around 8:30 p.m. She was on a ventilator, and her case had become a pitched legal battle between her parents and a Texas hospital. The 9-year-old had been declared brain dead a few weeks ago. Fort Worth Hospital wanted to remove her from the ventilator after the declaration of brain dead. Her parents wanted to keep her on the machine. A judge ruled this past week, that the little girl should stay on the ventilator. So the little girl was never removed from the ventilator. before she died, but she did die. On Friday, her heart stopped beating on its own, and she passed away. And so the important takeaway here is no one killed Peyton Summons. No one killed this little girl. She died on her own, and it's okay for someone to die. In this case, no one killed the little girl. There's no guilt, I should say. It's not okay when someone dies, but there's no guilt when someone dies. And it's ennobling to go to even extraordinary measures to try to save someone, which her parents did, went to extraordinary, were willing to hire a lawyer and fight to try to keep their daughter alive. Even though in the end the little girl died, her parents did what was heroic and noble in trying to save her. No matter what you think of the issue of brain death or any of that. But the same leftist lawyers and judges and legislators and governing officials who insist on opening America's hospitals to illegal aliens and heroin addicts and every other member of the dregs of society or people who don't even live here, they insist we open our hospitals to them without exception and without question. And that if we don't, that we're somehow evil and mean. If we don't allow the illegal aliens and the heroin addicts to take up all the hospital space they need, we're mean. Those same bastards were willing to go to court and object to a 9-year-old girl taking up a hospital bed for a few more days while her parents wept. And you call us mean. You call conservatives mean. When you wanted to pull the plug while the girl's heart was still beating, you bastards. Unbelievable. All right. Now, we go further into the personhood file, into the hero section of the personhood file, where a mother named Gemma Nuttall from Rossendale, Lancashire, England. She turned down chemotherapy a few years ago because she was told by doctors, well, she was told she had ovarian cancer and that the prognosis was very, very dire. And she was pregnant. And she was told that the chemotherapy might save her, but it would certainly kill her baby. And so she decided not to get the chemotherapy so that her baby could live and be born. And her baby did live, and her baby was born. Baby Penelope was born because her mother decided to turn down chemotherapy. Well, now the mother has died of ovarian cancer. The mother had, instead of chemo, which may have saved her and would have killed her baby, the mother went through the pregnancy, had the baby, and then opted for a new type of immunotherapy that initially was successful, but the cancer returned, and now the mother leaves behind 4-year-old daughter Penelope. But that is a hero, right? Gemma Nuttall is noble and a hero. She chose to risk her own life for real, not in any abstraction, but for real. She risked her life to save the life of another human being, and that's rare and that's heroic. And we want to just lift up what Gemma Nuttall did as heroic. That's all. That's heroic. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, ladies and gentlemen. We go now to... Now, as I'm reading through this story, I noticed that they never mention the father, because I noticed things like that. There's no mention of the father in the story, because I think you're not allowed to mention fathers anymore. It's just, it's taboo to mention that men have anything to do with procreation or child rearing or parenting or anything like that. So I did as much research as I could to try to find. Now that baby had a father. Baby Penelope had a father, but you had to go back to a story from January of 2017. January, when there was a totally unrelated news story about Gemma Nuttall and the father of her baby, because Penelope was the first baby born at a specific hospital on January 1st, 2017. Penelope was a New Year's baby, and that made the newspaper. And we find out that the father was a terminally adolescent landscaper with another son from a previous relationship, and he's since disappeared from the life of heroic mother Gemma Nuttall. And that's why they didn't mention the father, because generally he's not around. They never got married, and he had another child from another relationship. Isn't that an interesting way to put it? I love my other son from a previous relationship. Someone else I fell into bed with has another kid of mine. Anyway, Gemma... despite the fact that Gemma is a hero and did something heroic, the future of European civilization is on the rocks. I'm sorry. By the way, from the story from 2000, from New Year's Day, Penelope was the first girl, birthed from an unmarried, fornicating couple of Brits. The first boy born at the same hospital was named Hassan, and that baby boy was birthed by a pair of fornicating Muslims there in. None of them were married, none of them, and so Western Europe continues to circle the drain despite the heroic efforts of many. And on top of all that, get this, a little over 40% of all births in the U.S. now occur outside of wedlock. Listen to this, that's up from 10% in 1970. 10%. There was only 10% of births were out of wedlock in 1970. Can you believe that? It's now approaching 50%. The report was based on data released by the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, UNFPA. UNFPA, what? United Nations Population Fund. Why wouldn't it be UNPUF? UNPUF. Why is it UNFPA? Oh, I see. The official name is the Fund for Population Activities. Because most of the activities of the United Nations Population Fund go toward killing innocent children. That's, or choking off via birth control, choking off the next generation. Or if one slips past the goalie, they have finances there to participate in population activities that kill the children. But they do keep track. They keep track. The United Nations Population Fund, according to Bloomberg, is the largest international provider of sexual and reproductive health services, which means rubbers, birth control pills, and abortions. That's what that's. Not to put too fine a point on it, and I certainly don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. So approaching 50% here in America, the number is even higher in Europe. They have even more births out of wedlock than we do, believe it or not. We have a quote here. Who is this from? John Santelli, a professor of population, family health, and pediatrics at Columbia. He says, cohabiting partners are having children before getting married. That's a long-term trend across all developing nations. More couples are choosing not to have kids at all. The fertility rate is at a historic 30-year low, according to the Centers for Disease Control. The decline in fertility would be much steeper, say researchers, if women weren't having children outside of marriage. Because hardly any of the young people are getting married anymore. And so, and they say the trend will continue. There is no doubt about it, they say. We can't go back to the 50s. Can't go back to the 50s, they say. Well, here's the thing, folks. If it's possible that without civil war and bloodshed that we could overturn what Justice Tom Parker called the Roe exception, the Roe exception to the right to life of all innocent people, there's one exception to that. It's the Roe exception. If it's possible that we can overturn that without civil war and bloodshed, then I think it is possible we could go back to the 50s. So we're going to hold out hope, even though we have become something of a nation of bastard children. A generation of bastard children. I mean, look, it's right here in the report from the UN. They keep track of every kid they kill, of every rubber they hand out, of every abortion pill and every birth control pill they hand out. They got records. And we basically now are in the midst of a generation of bastard children. And I'm not using that as a profanity. I'm using that as a technical term. A bastard is a child, a male, specifically, born outside of wedlock who doesn't know his father. We've had two bastards in the White House. Bill Clinton, whose mother was some sort of prostitute in Little Rock, impregnated by who knows what, a traveling motorcycle gang or a circus. And then Barack Obama, who was part of the whole hippie culture, falling in and out of bed with black power nationalists and all of that. Two bastards in the way. I think the fact that that Donald Trump knew his father, I think that enrages the left. Just the fact that he knew his father and he grew up in a normal house, right, where a man was married to a woman and had kids, that freaks the left out. They hate him. But oddly enough, the fact that Donald Trump grew up in this somewhat normal house, that's enough to make gullible evangelicals and Christians and conservatives love him, because he did know his father. It's odd. We are definitely in a strange place, ladies and gentlemen, and that comes to us from the decline and fall file, half of U.S. births now occurring outside of marriage. All right. And in light of that, we go to the domestic tranquility file, where reports from Tennessee, Fox News reports from Tennessee that 55-year-old Cynthia Collier and her four adopted teenage children were found dead, identified as 14-year-olds Bo Lee and Megan Lynn, 15-year-old Leah Lynn, and 17-year-old Kaylee Lynn. They were discovered by the Maury County Sheriff's Department dead. Evidence indicates a murder-suicide. A mother and her four adopted teenage children discovered dead in their home. The Maury County Sheriff says that it appeared to be a loving home. It appeared to be a very loving family, says the sheriff. The mother and her husband, Randy, were in divorce proceedings. They had tried to reconcile, but the father had not lived in the same home as his family since 2009. So, divorce proceedings, attempts to reconcile. The father hasn't lived at home since 2009. Now we have a family detonation with mother and four adopted children dead in the home. And the sheriff says it appeared to be a loving home, a very loving family. Is the sheriff disconnected from all reality? Why would you assume it was a loving home or a very loving family? I don't understand. Are we not allowed to insinuate that maybe there was trouble, domestic trouble? Maybe the fact that parents getting divorced is problematic and it causes... No, we're not allowed to say anything. A divorced family is a happy and loving family as any other family. No, we're not allowed to cast aspersions on anyone's particular lifestyle. Be judgmental. Don't be judgmental. Let's see now. Do I want to go to Al Gore? No, let's go to Hungary. From the decline and fall file, we have a new subfile called the Sliver of Sanity file. The Sliver of Sanity in the decline and fall of Western civilization file comes to us this week from Budapest, Hungary, where a decree has been signed by Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban dropping gender studies from a list of master degree programs that are entitled to official accreditation. So the government of Hungary will no longer recognize gender studies as legitimate. Institutions, by the way, in Hungary are also barred from launching new courses in any discipline, so having anything to do at all with anything to do with gender studies, according to Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, providing for all of us a sliver of sanity in an ever-darkening, swirling, sucking eddy of insanity that is embodied in gender studies. The Central European University there is all upset. There's a pile of queers there who've issued a statement saying that this is a significant loss to the Hungarian scholarly community and for democratically minded public policy everywhere. All right. So the pile, let's see here. Orbán and his allies have been accusing the pile of queers at Central European University and others offering gender studies degrees. Orbán and his allies have been accusing that whole pile of working on what they call gay rights and gender science. And they say gender studies has no business being taught in universities. This is an ideology and not a science, says Prime Minister Orbán and his half-sane allies. Well, they're at least half sane. They at least realize gender studies is ridiculous. They also noted in their decree, they also noted in the decree that the labor market demand for gender studies graduates is close to zero. Nobody is looking to employ a genderologist. There's not a big demand, right? Well, that's because the socialist insane governments of Europe have yet to order every company to hire someone with a gender studies. That day will come if Prime Minister Orbán doesn't get his bit into the mouth of Europe and yank it back from the edge. The day will come when we'll all be forced to hire these gender studies graduates, for crying out loud. Orbán has also been accused of targeting specifically the efforts of U.S. billionaire George Soros, who's the father of gender studies and legalized drugs and just about everything else that is being formulated in the highest echelons of government and disseminated out and vomited out upon the people. All sorts of immorality and corruption. You can trace almost all of it back to billionaire George Soros. And as far as I can tell, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban is the only Yurt leader I'm aware of who's actively fighting against the efforts of George Soros. And I think he earns himself a place in the hero file for fighting against George Orwell. I'm sorry, George Soros. Ha! Now there's a Freudian slip for you. How about that? Meanwhile, the insane syphilitic governing officials in England, there's no other explanation except possibly syphilitic insanity. They have released Islamic State supporter and hate preacher Anjem Chowdhury. You remember this guy? I remember this guy. He was the one who preached the sermons in the mosques in England that led to actual physical violent attacks from jihadists. The Sun reports that these violent attacks included a pair of Al-Qaeda-inspired killers who ran over British soldier Lee Rigby and stabbed him to death in 2013. I remember that. He also inspired the London Bridge attack from prison. Well, they've released him now. He's been placed in a probation hostel, which is in view of a primary school in Camden, North London. That's appropriate. If you're going to unleash the maniacs, be sure to do it at an elementary school. They call Chowdhury the face of radical Islam in Britain for years. The judge who sent him to prison. Now listen to this. If If you doubt my diagnosis of syphilitic insanity that dominates all of the skulls of the British hierarchy, the judge who sentenced Chowdhury to prison in 2016 said that, told Chowdhury, "You show no remorse. I have no doubt you will continue to communicate your message wherever you can." And then he sentenced him to something less than 2 years in prison. And now he's been released. And there you have it. Now, these not only are the British insane, but it's documentarily provable that they're insane. Because they knew the minute they put him in prison what he would do if they ever let him out or let him live. This guy should not be allowed to live or breathe. At least not in Europe. And the crown, by the way. The crown does retain the just authority to act as judge and executioner, which they should have done in the case of Adjem Chowdhury, but instead he's been released to mock and perhaps provide all of us with an inkling into the diagnosis of the insanity that is pulling Europe over the precipice and into the drain. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.